Hello and welcome to Step Up Nigeria's podcast. This is our sixth episode in the series and we're glad to have you with us today. My name is Oluwafemi Adeola and I have my colleague from Step Up Nigeria with me here this morning, Ibukunluwa Ijaobo, and our special guest for today is Mr. Ajibola, who I'd like to introduce himself at this point.
Yeah, my name is Ajibola and I work for ICR, I'm the editor of ICR Abuja.
Yes, that's the International Center for Investigative Reporting,
you're right,
for those who don't know. Okay, so Step Up Nigeria's podcast is built to create awareness for good governance issues and to highlight, you know, the cost of corruption that we usually don't see and its impact on service delivery on the average citizen. We hope this would help to promote values that will build and help a society of people with integrity. So this week's podcast will focus on issues of corruption in the media, how rampant that problem has become and recommendations to address it. I'll start with first question this morning is, why do we think it's important to have a free and powerful media in Nigeria?
Yeah, thank you very, very much, Ferami. It's very important for us to have a free press in Nigeria because the issue of democracy is very, very connected to free press. Before you can have a democracy that is robust, that is going to produce advancement for Nigerians, for everybody in Nigeria, then you need to have a very strong media, the media that is free to operate, to ensure that the leaders are being accountable to every issues. And it is the role of the media in democracy to ensure that that happens. So a strong media can only do that, not a weak one.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So from someone who is in the media, what kinds of corruption exist in the media, would you say?
Yeah, talking about the corruption in the media, well, you will not want to label it like the issue of corruption that we have in other places. Yeah, there are practices that exist in the media that corrupt the practices of the media. So you might not exactly want to say that, oh, it's like stealing government money or putting your hands in the public till and all that. No, it's not like that. So the issue of corruption in the media basically, you know, speaks to the collection of what everybody is now known as brown envelope. So if you're talking about corruption in the media, you want to talk about the brown envelope things.
Okay. And I'm going to give a scenario, and this is from personal experience, but we also tag this as a brown envelope scenario. Where I worked before, I won't name them, but when we do projects, we write the stories for the media. So we write the draft, we write the publications, and then we pay for them to be posted. Should it be that way, or should the media be able to decide what they want to publish on a particular issue?
Yeah, that one is very problematic, although it's a regular practice, but it's problematic. And the problem there is that, you know, any time that you introduce gifts for journalists to report a story, either that will be published or that will be aired on the radio or television, in a way, you are trying to refocus the attention of that journalist not to report the issue very objectively. Because there's something about gifts. If I give you something now, and I give you, you know, regularly, anytime there's an issue that affects me or my image or my integrity, and you have to report that matter to the public, you remember that I've given you something in the past, and you want to be kind in your report. So that way, there's no way you can be very objective in reporting about me who has been giving you a gift over the time. So that happens with journalists. When a journalist, you know, reports, and this news source or whoever that generated content tried to, you know, provide some kind of a gift or support to that journalist, in a way it affects the way that journalist reports that incident or that issue, and that in a way corrupts the integrity of that media product or text.
Okay, so can you tell us about the brown envelope syndrome in Nigeria?
Okay. Well, this is an idea that I think it has hold as the practice of journalism in Nigeria. So it's not something that started today. Mm-hmm. So it just, you get some money gifts, but because people know that they should not hand it over to you very openly, so they want to attach some kind of decency to it, so they put an envelope.
And it has to be brown.
Well, you know, it's just recently that we start having all different colors of envelopes. So in the past, it's usually brown envelope. So everything is always packaged in brown envelope. So what you were always getting that time up to now. Anyway, I don't think it's from, they are getting brown envelope any longer. Maybe you should change your so it's no longer
bank alerts.
The guys are last now, all kinds of transfers and all that. So whatever gratification that a journalist get to do his job that is packaged is known as brand envelope.
But why do we think corruption persists in the media? Is there an issue of remuneration or dissatisfaction, or why is that necessary? Why is the media still susceptible to this happening?
Well, that's a very huge one you just raised now. Why does a brand envelope collection continue? Why do journalists continue to collect brand envelope? If you look at the way the media industry is set up in Nigeria, you will recall that a good number of our media houses don't even pay journalists their dues. Mm-hmm. Many newspapers, TV station hold journalists' salaries, you know, lasting month. Some underpaid. You know, you can imagine when a journalist get like 30,000 or 20,000 per month. Or some don't even pay at all. So when you have that kind of scenario, it's a recipe for, you know, a situation where journalists would have to find other means of survival. Even though it is not ethical, I doubt whether any journalist who knows his onion would not accept the fact that collecting money, brand envelope, is ethical. Everybody knows that. But when you find yourself in a circumstance that you cannot but just, you know, get gratification for what you do, that is why this culture of collecting brand envelope keeps persisting. And it will continue. And the reason why it will continue is that the problem, the root problem, has not been taken care of. Journalists are still being owed. Salaries are not being paid on time. Many newsrooms still underpay. So for as long as you have that kind of system, you will still have journalists who will always, you know, seek help from other sources, including their news sources.
Okay. I have a question, sir. So we spoke about this brand envelope being for doing what you're supposed to do. Do we have cases whereby it's for not bringing out a particular or not reporting a particular story that is supposed to be told or not? Like the brown envelope being for not to do something
from
stop.
So I
would like to know if.
Yeah, you know, like I say, the nature of gifts, when you collect gifts from people, it has a way of affecting your judgment. Okay, take for instance, if I go to the National Hospital and I see a lot of people sick, and I see a lot of, you know, terrible conditions that people, patients are going through in the hospital, I'm a journalist, I'm supposed to report that. Then I go to the ministry, oh, this is what I saw in the hospital, people are dying and they're not being attended to, the hospital in shambles and all that. Minister of Health, what can you do about it? And the minister comes and says, hey, do you know that in the last 5 years, the government has actually invested a certain amount in public health? In fact, the budget of this government on health is more than the government of any previous administration and all that. And we are doing well. It's just that, well, maybe it's not enough, but these are the things that we are doing. And when you are going, the man gave you 20,000 in a brown envelope, as they call it. And this is a guy who probably for the last 9 months, and some newspaper has not paid for the last 9 months, has not collected salary. And somebody just gave, he's not likely to reject that kind of money offer. So when he does that, he goes out and writes a story. You can be sure that the story that he's going to write will probably promote more the statement of the minister than what he saw in the hospital. He would do that because he would want to be invited again by the health minister for that kind of interview so that he can get more 20,000 regularly. And that is how these corruption and something that compromises integrity of media reports continues.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I mean, it's quite disturbing because we've always heard them refer to the media as the fourth estate of the realm. You know, they're supposed to be the checks and balances that the government has sometimes failed to do on each other. And I'm now wondering, what do we think? How can the media address this issue? Because I know there are peculiar problems that the media has, but what can media houses first of all do? You've already said remuneration, so we know that's already a given answer. If that happens, maybe it would make, and it stems from even outside the media, in civil service. The reason why a lot of these things happen is because people are not paid, and if they're not paid, they can't fend for themselves, and then when these opportunities come. So what can media do?
Yeah, as you rightly said, it's very important for media to constantly check other agencies of government, the executive especially, and the legislature and all that, and even the corporate elite. It is the responsibility of the media to make sure that all the time you watch them. That's why media has been described as a watchdog. You ensure that the public money or public resources is not misused or underused. That is your job. You are the higher of the public. But you are limited in doing that because of your own, economic or financial issues. But that is not the only problem that is actually affecting good practice. The system we have in place in the media industry also now is not sound enough. I mean, there was a time we used to have something like an ombudsman in the newsroom. Those ones, their job is to look at the fairness, the accuracy, the integrity of your report to make sure that it meets, the basic standard. Most newsrooms used to have that kind of a person or structure in the past. They do not have it again. And by not having an ombudsman office in the newsroom, it's in a very significant way affect the quality of what we produce today. So you are asking that what should we do to address that problem? I think that's one of the things that needs to be taken very seriously. Ombudsman structure should be brought back to the newsroom. How that one is going to be done is under kettle of fish.
So in tackling corruption and promoting good governance, what are the other, you're an investigative journalist, what are the other issues you face in being able to expose things that are happening aside from, aside from being given envelopes and things like that, are there restrictions that the media has in being able to get the information they need to get the news reports and then to get the reports out there?
Yeah, the fear is always there, especially in this administration. You recall that a journalist has just been released from the prison. What is called?
Samuel.
I'm not even talking about Samuel. I'm talking about Jones. Jones. Jones have been spent 2 years.
Yes, that I've been seeing that.
For doing what? For doing journalism. So when you are an investigative journalist and you have at the back of your mind that when you do something that does not meet the temperament of the people in power, you could spend 2 years in jail. That in a way puts some kind of limitation, restriction to what you want to do and how you want to do it. That is one fear that most journalists, those of us who are in the business of doing investigation, that's one challenge that people face from time to time. Then another one is, we're talking about FOI the other time, making requests for FOI and that. We do not need to be asking for information that is supposed to be in the public place all the time. But these informations are not there. Most agencies of government have the information that they keep to themselves as if it's their own property, private property. Mm-hmm. Public information is not private property. It's supposed to be out there for everybody who are interested to take it, including journalists. Yeah. But those informations are not there. And that's one of the challenges that those of us who are investigative journalists, that's one of the challenges that we face. If you want to do your story, you need documents. You need public records for you to be able to do a story that is credible and accurate. But those informations are difficult to find. And that's what I just told you about in the last moments now. International Center for Investigative Reporting has filed for FOI, about 10 FOI, to different agencies of the government. And the response we got from them is that we are going to get back to you. What we asked for, we have not gotten up to now. So those are the challenges that from time to time that we face as investigative reporters.
Okay. Thank you. So now, and this was my final question, really. What is there a part the government can play in terms of legislation or anything the government and CSOs also in terms of advocacy can do to strengthen the power of the media, including getting answers to your requests and being able to be free to speak? Is there a legislation that should protect the media? What do you think the government and CSOs can do?
I think government should just simply respect the law.
And that really is the problem.
Yeah, just respect the law.
Oh, is there already?
There are several laws. If you read the FOI law is a very, very good law that can bring a lot of accountability and transparency to governance.
Very true.
And this law has been there since May 2011. And up to now, we are still struggling to have the law implemented, enforced. So government should just, respect the law. Make sure that information that are public are made public.
Mm-hmm.
We do not need to be asking for public information all the time. Just put it there where government can, journalists or citizens of this country can find that information. That is one. And I think, secondly, they should also, I think it's also about respecting the law. You don't charge somebody who is reporting. What I mean is that you don't imprison that person or you don't detain him for 2 years. If you think the person's report is subversive, at least the best you can do is take him to court, let the court decide whether what he has done or reported is subversive or not. It is not in your place as executive, because the DSS is an agency of the executive arm of the government. So you don't use your power in such a way that you limit the freedom of press and journalists when they are doing their job. Once they do that, I think we're all going to be better for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else on CSOs? Okay. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Ajibola. We enjoyed having this conversation with you. How can we follow up with you on social media or the ICIR? Where can we read your news? Are you on social media?
So you can get ICR on www.icrnigerian.org. And I also can be reached on Twitter at Ajibola Hamza. That's my Twitter handle. And even on LinkedIn is Ajibola Hamza. And on Facebook as well. And ICR is on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on all the relevant social media. So you can find us at www.icrnigerian.org.
Thank you very much. And please follow us on Twitter at step_up_Nigeria. It's the same on our YouTube and on our Instagram page. And Emeka's Money Book has a page on Instagram that you should please follow to follow the progress and the journey of the book. And follow up our activities also on our website at www.stepupnigeria.org. Please visit our gallery and respond to our blog and listen to the other podcasts if you enjoyed this one. Like, comment, and share. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.